afternoon, and welcome to We the People. My name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And I don't know why we can't do that the same every week.
We could just pre-record that part.
We're here every week, and we all look at each other like, okay, who's going to go next? What a bunch of goofballs. So today, we have another serious topic that actually, and it's something that really needs to be dealt with because we're seeing all sorts of issues everywhere. And regardless of where you live, your county, your city, and maybe still your state are grappling with the marijuana issue. And all we hear is, you know, we've got to have it for, you know, medication and all this stuff. And then, you know, if you say anything about it, you're an old fogey or a hater or I don't know. I'm not sure what other bad things we are, but, you know, you're bad if you don't like it. And so we have Dr. Philip Drum on with us today to discuss this issue from, like, actually two. He's got an interesting, interesting perspective. He's got a personal connection with this. And his job, he is a, let's see here, hold on. He's been a pharmacist for 31 years, who's had a wide range of experiences from community pharmacy practice, residency in hospital pharmacy practice as a hospital-based oncology pharmacist. He's been in, you know, administration. He's been a clinical coordinator and later a regional manager. So he's done, like, a wide variety of things within the pharmacy business or industry, whichever way you look at it, and brings a really good scientific perspective and just a lot to be discussed with this whole thing. So, just wanted to let you know, you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. We've posted all sorts of good information for you. I'm still posting a couple of things, and all the information about our guest, and if you would like to contact him at all, you can shoot us an email, obviously, and you can find me at Aaron at WeThePeopleRadio.us or Bill at WeThePeopleRadio.us.
That's it.
Pretty simple. We try to keep it all very tidy for you. So, without further ado, anybody else? Did we forget anything?
No. Sounds like the plan.
I like the deer in the headlights response. I like it. So, Dr. Drum?
Yes.
Are you in there? Yeah, there you are. I could hear your, I don't know. The little sound that somebody's out there, but just wanted to make sure we had voice for you.
Well, thank you very much for having me on today.
Thanks for making the time. Sunday afternoon, you know, it's funny. Either people are available or they're not, but it's kind of a relaxed day, so we have time. We don't have to do the 2-minute interview cramming everything you know. So anything you'd like to tell folks before we kind of get on to this?
Well, I'm a different kind of pharmacist. I think most people, even my members of my own family, really don't understand what it is that I do. Right now, actually, I'm doing quality work for IVs and building drug libraries for inpatient and outpatient pharmacies and to be able to allow medications to be delivered accurately and safely. But as you mentioned, I was an oncology pharmacist. So I worked with AIDS patients and I worked with cancer patients. Because again, AIDS patients are immune compromised just like cancer patients are. And so I have a background in that area and understand, the use of FDA approved dronabinol, which is Delta 9 THC, which is the active component in marijuana. I've used that in patients and recommended it in patients, back in the 80s, in the 1980s. And that's how long, that drug's been around. So a lot of the information that is being espoused by the pot industry is really just absolute lies, and like to be able to point those out to folks and realize how badly they've been duped.
Because there is actual medication that derives from marijuana? Is that?
That's correct.
Okay.
And we've had it since 1985. It is the active, psychoactive component that the drug addicts are seeking from their marijuana. It's called Delta 9 THC or tetrahydrocannabinol. And it was synthetically created in the early 80s and used for the FDA approved indication for use, which is what the marijuana industry actually steals. They use the data from dronabinol to quote and promote their use in cancer patients for nausea and vomiting. It's actually the dronabinol work. It's not marijuana work. It's dronabinol, synthetic THC work. And also the use in AIDS patients to help them stimulate an appetite to eat. That was the dronabinol work, the synthetic THC, not the marijuana. So they actually steal and use the FDA-approved drug studies to show that their marijuana does this. Their marijuana contains over 60 other cannabinoids that cause a lot more other problems as well. They also contain other products such as CBD, which is a different product, which is under national evaluation at this point in time for use in seizures. So, again, we've once again used a component of the marijuana plant to evaluate its efficacy in patients. And, again, people can get CBD for free. So if you're foolish enough to go out and be buying this from the marijuana industry, which has no quality control, studies came out in which they looked at what they claimed they were selling, and their percentages of what they were claiming were in the products are incorrect because there's no quality control like for the pot industry like there is for the drugs being made by drug companies. They have the Food and Drug Administration looking down their backs to make sure that they are creating what they say they're creating. The pot industry has no such such factors. They're trying to build them now, but this has been how many years since we've had? 20 years? Since 1996?
Yeah, no kidding.
And prior to this, they never were testing their products. When they recently started testing the products in the state, they found like something 33 out of 35 products were unavailable for human consumption.
So the cannabinol is not a prescription drug?
Cannabidiol is a non-psychoactive cannabinoid. So you have those that affect the brain and cause hallucinations, and those that do not, even though they're a cannabinoid in structure. So they do not affect the brain to cause hallucinations. Yeah. And so that's the cannabidiol, CBD, also known as, the one that they put in Charlotte's Web, the one that they're using for these very rare pediatric seizures, in which in the studies that have come out thus far, a phase two study came out, showing that it's only 25% more active than placebo. Placebo rates were around 14 to 15%, and its effects were something around 39% effective. Because as we know, most people know that children that have seizures, as they get older, their seizures go away. And so that's why we see a placebo response, because as time's going on, the child's getting older, and yet their seizures are going away with just sugar pill, just the plain placebo, 15% of the time. So the reality is CBD is only working in 1 in 4 kids, but having 80 to 90% side effects in all the kids. And so that's the problem why it's having a hard time coming to market, is when you have a drug that has that many side effects, kind of is difficult to get it to market.
Yeah, no kidding. So tell me this, before we get into the story of your sister, where were you on marijuana before, you know, it was actually personally impacting your family? I'm assuming, well, because of your work, you...
I was on kind of on the fence of, like, if people are stupid enough to use this, but the reality was is I never thought it would get as big and gone as wild and have lack of controls. And definitely would be against it based on just that alone, let alone what happened to my family. You have to be aware that, again, we have the Food and Drug Administration. We're going back to the 1880s. The 1880s, where guys were selling, you know, the snake oil off the back of their rigs and saying that this will cure everything. What other medication do we have out there that cures everything? Like the claims coming from the pot industry that marijuana does. It's nonsensical. The only drug that I think that could come close is aspirin. And I don't give somebody a chunk of the willow tree and say, here, chew on this, there's your aspirin.
Well, it's kind of funny because I was just at a county hearing, you know, because the counties are grappling with this in states where it's legal, you know, it's turning into a bit of a train wreck. We have lots of problem with our public lands, with cartel growing. And so now, you know, states and counties are trying to figure out, well,
You know, should we actually permit commercial growing so that, you know, because their thing is, well, then you know where it came from and all, it's all tightly controlled, blah, blah, blah.
And that was the ruse that was sold in Colorado, which turned out to be a lie.
Sure. Well, the funny part is these guys, you know, I can't say an entire industry, but the ones I dealt with were not very smart. So they had one lady who was actually, you know, she's an attorney, so she looks at all the sides of the thing, and she was actually taking them seriously. You know, hey, these guys are, you know, really, they want to make a legit business. They've got a little logo. They wear special, you know, they wear little polo shirts. You know, these guys don't seem like your garden variety, you know, dope growers. And so she was like, well, you know, maybe we could do like a pilot project, right? So people were, nah, we don't want to do a pilot project. So before this thing comes in front of the Board of Supervisors, these guys that are supposedly the, you know, the gold standard for how you do this legally and correctly, I got busted by the sheriff for a giant commercial girl, and they all got arrested.
Yep. Yeah.
We have to take a really quick break before we continue on, but I just thought I'd throw that in there because, you know, that's what's happening. That's what people are saying. So when we come back, let's talk about Rosemary, because I didn't tell Bill any of this, so at least you'll have one active listener who does not know the story, and all of it is on the web. So please reference there. I know we're going to give you a ton of information today.
Around 1970.
Oh, so they started.
Diamond was, you know, exploring.
Is Neil Diamond a pothead?
Experimenting, yes. Yeah,
it's actually an anti-pot song if you listen to the whole thing.
Oh, I need to get out more. I'm here to be educated. Oh, my gosh. So we forgot to mention that just because the topics usually are frustrating and complicated, we kind of mess around with the music a little bit. Dr. Drum. So there will be periodic outbursts of silliness. Just to be, you know, just to be clear. All right, so
these are all stones.
I know, yeah, right. Highly unlikely, but okay. So can you start us off on what happened with Rosemary? Because honestly, from the sounds of it, this is not going to be this is something that's coming for a lot of other people, and they don't even know it yet.
Well, that's very true. In fact, since my sister was murdered, I've been investigating and looking into this. And sadly, to say, since Prop 64 was passed in the state of California, we can easily expect to see an increase in 40%. That's 40 in the number of driving fatalities due to marijuana. We're already at 20% of our driving fatalities are due to marijuana in California, and we can expect a 40% increase. That is what was seen in Washington and Colorado on average when they went from a medical marijuana state to a recreational marijuana state. My sister was the oldest. I have one of three kids. My dad was a Marine. He served in Korea and Vietnam. And Rosemary actually took the brunt of all of our moving around. We lived all on the West Coast, Hawaii and Seattle and San Diego and San Francisco, all over the places. My dad was stationed in multiple places during the 50s and 60s. And he retired in 68, and we went back to where we were living in the Central Valley, where my mom's family was from. And I was able to grow up there for 12 years going to school, but Rosemary was already halfway through that. And when she graduated, she was very interested in medicine, and she ended up becoming a nurse. And she got married to a person that worked in the boating industry, and they moved up to Seattle, Washington, where she lived throughout her life from 1980 on. And she was a nurse in critical care medicine in the ICU. She also worked in the emergency room later on. She actually even worked for an ambulance company where she was the person caring for people in the back of the ambulance. And then finally she was in quality at the end of her career. And so it's 5 years ago tomorrow. It will be the fifth anniversary of my sister's death. She was killed while driving to work, 6:20 in the morning, driving into Seattle, Washington, going to work at Virginia Mason Hospital, and she was hit head-on by a person under the influence of marijuana. He was driving down a center turn lane for 400 feet. The legally allowed distance is 300 feet. So he was in there for the entire length of a football field, plus the end zones, and even a little bit bigger than that, driving down the center turn lane, going 48 and 35. And at the last minute, the entire time, a car had been stopped attempting to make the legal left turn from that turn lane. He was driving right towards it for 400 feet. At the last second, he realized in his hallucinogenic effect that he was under with his marijuana, that he was driving right towards a stopped vehicle. And at the last second, then realized, I need to get out of here, and he turned to his left. Instead of turning to the right and getting back in the lane he should have been in. Because, as he told the police officers, the car in front of him was going too slow for him. So this lie, this points out the lie of marijuana drivers drive slow. That's another falsehood. 30% of driving fatalities due to marijuana, the driver is speedy. 30%. Okay? Wow. So with alcohol, it's at the 40%, but it is high, and when you combine the two, it's even higher. It's about 50%, about 48% if you combine alcohol with marijuana. About 48% are driving or speeding in fatal cases. And so here he was at the last second turning to his left. Well, my sister had nowhere to go. She was coming in with the incoming traffic going into Seattle on a major thoroughfare, which ended up getting shut down for 8 hours that day. As a result of the crash, she hit my sister first, shoved her into the car. She tried moving to her right, as the guy in the center lane said that I felt this bump from the car to my left, and then I felt this huge shove, because that's when he hit Rosemary shoved into that center lane car. So he squeezed alongside of Rosemary and the other car that was there, stopped legally in that turn lane, and proceeded to lose his front wheels, catapulted, went down the street, tumbling, and caused an 8-car pileup. My sister's car engine, which was the Subaru, and which you can imagine every time I see those commercials on TV about Subaru, how great they are, she was in a Subaru and was killed, had the engine compartment shoved into her chest, broke her neck. They had to cut the roof of the car off to get her out. That when he tumbled down the road, he crawled out through the roof of his Jeep, and all he had was a broken fingernail. Meanwhile, there was another car of a woman who had a broken arm, busted out teeth. So she was the assault victim in the case, and again, an 8-car pileup. They took him down to the hospital, and the officers were evaluating him. Well, the people, the police, the medical personnel was evaluating him. They sent down a DRE, or drug recognition expert, to speak with him, who he proceeded to cross off all of the physical activities that one does during a DRE evaluation. So, as you guys are fully aware, when you have alcohol drivers, they do the 9-step walk and turn. Well, they didn't do that for him. They do the finger to nose. They didn't do that for him. They do the one-legged stand. He didn't do that for him. So all of the physical activities that one would have, he didn't do it. He was in a cervical collar. He was able to move. In fact, he walked out of the hospital at the end of the day. And so none of those activities were performed and were scratched out by the DRE officer. He was taking a pulse. It was rapid. He was taking a his blood pressure. It was elevated. He saw that his eyes were glassy and red. And he did show that he lacked convergence in his eye. That's where you hold your finger towards their nose. You bring it in. And some people call it crossing their eye. Well, a person in the influence of marijuana has a lack of convergence, meaning they can't hold their gaze to that centerline fingertip. What happens is that the marijuana, one of the components, one of the cannabinoids, weaken the muscle of the eye so it can't hold that pupil towards the middle. And what you'll see is you'll see the pupil bip out to the side for a quick second and it'll come back to midline. So that's called lack of convergence, which he had. He had a raspy voice, which is what marijuana smokers have. And so he had all these positive attributes and did no physical evaluations of him and proceeded to give an evaluation of not impaired.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And then at the end of their 12 steps, he has the blood drawn. And again, he doesn't know the results of the blood value, but it came back at 3.2, which was drawn 3 hours and 13 minutes after the event.
Is that a lot or a little?
So one thing you have to recognize is that marijuana, when smoked, clears the body very, very quickly. 80 to 90% is gone within an hour to 2 hours. 80 to 90% of the THC that they're looking for, because THC is fat-soluble. Blood is water-soluble. And so it's going into fat stores. One of your biggest fat stores in your body is your brain. And so marijuana, the Delta-9 THC is being sucked up into your brain to cause all those nice hallucinogenic effects. And within 5 to 15 minutes, you start seeing that when people are smoking. The blood levels go up typically to about 150 nanograms per ml. And within 2 hours, you're down to about 2 nanograms per ml. That's how quickly it drops, exponentially. Unlike alcohol, where alcohol is cleared at a set rate of 0.015% per hour. So we can back extrapolate and figure out what the alcohol level was at the time of the driving. We cannot do that with marijuana.
But even though it's
cleared... So that's why drawing blood levels for marijuana are semi-useless, because its clearance is so quick.
But even though you say that, for those of us that are really, really not medical people, that doesn't mean that they're not still affected by it. It just means it's not traceable.
Because it's in your brain.
Okay.
So what's in your blood doesn't necessitate what's in your brain with a large molecule that's fat soluble,
right,
like Delta-9 THC. Again, that is the psychotropic agent in THC. That's what we're looking at. And so it's not in the blood, but it's where? It's in your brain. It's in your fat stores in your body is where it goes to reside, and it slowly comes out. Now, what people get confused with and don't understand is people say, well, hey, I've heard of them being able to find marijuana in your blood system days later or weeks later. That's, number one, not marijuana. It is a metabolite, typically, of THC. Carboxy THC, in particular, is what they're looking for. It's a metabolite. So your body breaks down the THC and clears it from the body. Carboxy THC is not psychotropic. And so it will not have psychotropic effects. So even though it's found in the body days later, it's not having a psychotropic effect. And that's what typically your employers look for, is they look for that carboxy THC, and they can then find that 3-4, a week later, depending on how much the person's a smoker. If they're a chronic smoker, they've filled up all their fat stores, and they're going to chronically be releasing this for weeks. And that's what your employers look for, is they look for the carboxy THC, which is not psychotropic. It's the THC that's psychotropic.
So,
well, is there any way to take that level and back it up to tell how much they had smoked at a previous time? There's still no way to do it.
No, there's... So really what they're testing for, again, what I'd recommend, is THC. That's the psychotropic one. We should not be checking for the carboxy, but, that's what the Department of Transportation does look for, the metabolites. And that's what they use for airplane pilots, for interstate truck drivers.
Yep.
Your school bus drivers, your boat operators, your subway operators. They are being tested and looked for metabolites of THC.
And all that does is tell them that at some time in their recent past, they smoked marijuana.
Correct. And recent could be as recent as 3 weeks.
Right.
Oh. Hmm. Well, that's a toughie.
But reality is that they've done studies, and the THC effects are not just for 15 seconds.
Sure.
In fact, they've done it on pilots, and naive patients had them smoke marijuana, tested them 24 hours later on a simulator flight machine, and some guys missed the runways.
Hey.
And they said that their driving, their airplane piloting was so erratic, it was as if they were weaving down a roadway because they were constantly changing their wings and tail rudders and everything, that they would have a very hard time. So one of the things that I've learned through my studies is that typically somebody under the influence of marijuana and operating a heavy machinery is that they can only focus on one thing at a time. Again, very indicative of the guy that killed my sister. He was focusing on getting to work, driving down the road, passing cars. Not that he was driving right towards a stopped vehicle. When he woke up and realized he was driving towards a stopped vehicle, he turned to the left instead of to the right. And caused the mayhem that he caused.
So this claim that I'm so much more focused and I can do so much more when I smoke is all bunk.
Absolute lie.
Yeah.
They focus on one thing. So when Cheech and Chong drives 5 miles an hour,
yeah.
You know what they're focusing on? Their speedometer.
Yeah. That's true. We got to take a break.
Oh my gosh! So when we come back, there was a lot more to this case, and really is a very interesting indicator on why we're not hearing all this great information. Because I think people would have been less likely to vote for dopey propositions if they knew all of this. Be right back. Same again.
Yeah, didn't work out so good for him either.
Yeah, no kidding. Actually, welcome back. You're listening to We the People. You can join us online at wethepeopleradio.us. Got all the information about the show and our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm. Okay, so I had the sneak preview version last Wednesday when we spoke on the telephone. But tell folks about all the other stuff that went on with your sister's case, because that was shocking.
Okay, well, so again, as I mentioned, it'll be 5 years ago tomorrow. So she was murdered on July 17th of 2012. The big issue that, again, Rosemary was the only person in our family that lived up there in Washington. The rest of us all lived down here in California. And so we weren't really familiar with what was going on up there with regards to their marijuana initiative. We had no idea. This is their I-502 initiative, which allowed recreational marijuana in their state. So that was the big thing coming up that year. And so you have to understand that there were a lot of people behind that bill, including the DA's office that was being promised that, oh, all the crime rate's going to go away and you're not going to have to deal with marijuana anymore. The Seattle Police Department and other police departments up there, oh, the crime's going to go away and you're going to be able to focus your other times on other safety issues in the state and not have to deal with marijuana anymore. And even the judiciary, you're not going to be all plugged up and having to send people to jail anymore because marijuana is now going to be recreationalized and all that's just going to go away. Poof. Surprise, automatic. And all that was obviously all lies, as has been proven now for time in both Colorado and Washington. They're having increased crime rates, increased driving fatalities, increased black market. Everything that they said that would go away was absolute lie. They're all increasing. And so my brother gets called the next day about Rosemary and talks to the detective, and he mentions nothing about marijuana. When in reality, we find out later in the paperwork that the detective was standing right there when they uprighted his car. the murderer's car, and marijuana dispensary cards fell out right in front of him, right where the car was.
Wow.
And so they knew right away what they were dealing with. And again, they had also sent the DRE officer in. He had admitted to marijuana use 1 week before. And if that was the case, then he probably wouldn't have gone to work. He would have been so intoxicated and asleep. But the reality was he was still going to work. And so the reality was he was lying because he hadn't used the week before. He had used that morning. And so anyway, the detective knew right then and there on that day. Talked to my brother. My brother went up there the following week, took the contents of my sister's car back. And again, the detective never told him at all anything about marijuana. Nothing.
Oh, no kidding.
And so we end up finding out in September that from an insurance agent on the case, that marijuana was involved. And it's like, what? You know, and so we got a hold of tried to get a hold of the police department. They wouldn't call me back. As to why this was happening, why weren't we being kept abreast and informed as to what exactly had gone on in my sister's case? So I then contact the DA's office, who then throws up their hands and say, well, we don't know anything yet because we don't have the paperwork from the police department, so we don't know. And I said, well, if you need some help with marijuana, I can help you. And so get a hold of me and let me know what's going on. Well, turns out the paperwork never makes it over to the DA's office until October. I immediately put in a Freedom of Information Act request for all the documents from the police department, because now I started getting very wary as to what was going on up there. And now we're in October, late October, I'm aware that there's a marijuana initiative up there. And so I get the paperwork from the Freedom of Information Act, and then, they tried saying, oh, well, she's on vacation, and she'll get back to you sometime later in November. I got a hold of the person in charge, and I said, no, Freedom of Information Act in the state of Washington, you have to respond in 5 days. They said, well, we did. We told you it's going to take another month. And I said, well, no, that's not what's meant
not actually
by that bill. By that law. And so anyway, they get it to me. Again, thousands of papers. And so anyway, I start reading through it and start finding out reality land. And that blood was given consensually, and here's the blood level of 3.2, and that was drawn 3 hours and 13 minutes later. So I get a hold of the DA, who then tells me, well, I'm so busy, we're not gonna address this case until after Thanksgiving. Mind you, this was July 17th. So I'm looking things up, and I find out that, I then get called on November 5th, and I'm told, oh, I just filed charges against him today. You know what November 6th was? The day that they voted for marijuana in the state of Washington. We could not go to the media because they hadn't filed charges against the man. File charges until November 5th.
Oh, boy.
From a July 17th murder.
And was he out at that point?
Oh, absolutely. He walked out of the hospital. They never arrested him. No.
Right.
And so when they arraigned him, I saw what they had arraigned him for. He was arraigned, his bail was set at $100,000. And so I started researching and found out there was a single woman killed by an alcoholic driver in July whose bail was set at $250,000. And there was a single woman that was killed in August by an alcoholic driver, and that bail was set at $500,000. So I immediately emailed the DA and said, how come my sister's life is so cheap? Is it because marijuana was involved and the other two were alcohol? Of course, got no response from that. He was on probation at the time, seeing the judge, for beating his wife while under the influence of alcohol and marijuana, we later find out. And that judge allowed him to continue to use his marijuana, which he did, to kill my sister. And that we were told by the DA's office that, well, we're going to arrest him when he comes in to see that judge. Get an email later on that afternoon saying, well, man, by the time the sheriff got there, he had already left. So we didn't arrest him. So my 84-year-old mother asked me, don't they know where he lives? But no, they didn't go and arrest him. So when I go there for the arraignment, guess who's the face I see as I get off the elevator right in front of me on the courtroom floor? His. And he, of course, then comes in with little kids like 5 and 7 years old, sitting behind me. And if ever you want to get a picture of real justice in this land, please go to an arraignment. Please go to an arraignment and watch the rate of recidivism. It is sickening. It's like watching a merry-go-round that they tell you what his previous convictions were for, and now he's here for this. Previous convictions were for, and now he's here for this. And so we sat there for 2 hours. There was the media there. I told the DA I didn't want the media involved because now it was already after they had voted for their pot up there. And my sister had a house that we needed to sell, and there was no one living in it, and I didn't need her name out there in the media to say, oh, Rosemary Temple's house is up for sale. Well, it's out there, and nobody's living there. Go ahead and rob everything out of it.
Sure.
So they at least did it at the end of their session, so the media had already left when they were filming. So they didn't film the arraignment, in which the judge cut the bail in half right in front of me. So it wasn't. He wasn't a cheap $100,000. He was even a cheaper $50,000, so he could go home. So he went home. $50. I paid 10% of that. $5,000. He goes home.
And his
actually, I found out a really interesting thing at the arraignment. He was now working no longer for the sump pump company that he was working for before. He was now working for the state of Washington, a known drug dealer, drug addict. Was now building their rail system from the Seattle airport into town. That was his new job.
Wow, kind of can't make that up. And his
they
history.
They ended up not filing charges. The bottom line, the DA wanted just to file DUI, file reckless driving charges. They didn't feel they had enough case for the DUI. In fact, the DA on that day of the arraignment proceeds to tell me right to my face, well, his blood level wasn't a level of 5 or higher, therefore we can't charge him for marijuana. And I said, you're wrong. That was in I-502, that limit of 5. There was no limit on July 17th.
That's right.
Which is the law you have to go by, DA. And she also happened to not even read their own law, because Section 4B in their own law goes on to say if the blood's drawn after 2 hours, any THC level above 0.00 could be used as evidence that a person was under the influence or affected by marijuana. She didn't even know her own new law.
So obviously that.
So we had to hire a lawyer to convince the DA to file DUI charges against him. They did. I got a new DA, too. I said, I don't trust this woman. I want a new DA. And so get a new DA, come to court, pretrial hearing, which is very important, people. You need to go to your pretrial hearing because that's when a lot of the business gets done. Mm. And, in fact, the business that was done was we were given a judge that extended what the DA was requesting in other cases. So we were all thumbs up. That's who we want. We want a guy that the DA asks for 10 years, and he gives them 15.
Mm-hmm.
That's who we want. Because, again, my murderer had 42 court appearances in 49 years of life, including multiple DUIs for marijuana, even two within the same year in which he was supposed to have spent a year each. And they're so screwed up there in Washington that they didn't even put those two and two together, and he spent no time in jail. All of his 42 previous appearances were all plea bargained. All of them.
So he
including previously beating a girlfriend under the influence of marijuana, including a first felony for selling cocaine and marijuana to an undercover cop, plea bargained. His second felony for beating his wife, plea bargained. So this guy's spending no time in jail, and guess what he wanted from this case?
Probation.
A plea bargain.
Yeah.
And I told the DA, no chance in hell is he going to be getting a plea bargain in this case.
Yeah, no kidding.
Wow.
So with the DUI charge, if he was convicted by the jury, he was looking at 19 years in jail, as compared to the reckless driving, which was 4.5 years.
Hmm.
So the judge that we get wasn't Hangham Harry. The defense kicked him out and said, no, we don't want him. So guess which judge I get for my sister's case?
Oops.
The judge that was seeing him for beating his wife, that wrote the writ that allowed him to use his marijuana.
Hmm.
She sat there and said, well, I don't know if I got a conflict of interest. I found out about this case while he was with me. I have to go find out if I have to recuse myself. That was on Monday. On Tuesday, she comes in, gavels in, and says, let's go. And immediately then starts attacking the DA, starts attacking and asking her own questions. Not the defense attorney. The judge was going after the police officers, the DRE, and the detective. So it became blatantly obvious that we had a hostile jurist on our hands.
Sure, sure.
And so we went to the DA and said, we want her kicked off, just like the defense attorney had her kicked. We want her kicked out. We want somebody else. Oh, no, no, no. She knows him. She knows how bad he is. I said, did you see what he's doing to your DA?
Who decided that they wanted to... Well, how about this? Let's take a really quick break here before it's the top of the hour. And besides that, I guess we probably should let our blood pressure go down a little bit. I can hear people out there in the world going, what?
Yeah, career criminal gets off.
And this is not an isolated case. Anyway, we're here with Dr. Philip Drum. We're talking about, really, this is a wake-up call on the marijuana thing. That's the only thing I could think to call this program today. You can find all of our information about our guests and topics and archives and all that good stuff at wethepeopleradio.us. We'll be right back.
Warm is a smile, but his heart is cold.
He'll sell you dope, for he loves only gold.
He'll turn you on, and he'll freak you out. He'll get you low and turn your mind inside out.
Let me get to the point. Let's roll another joint and turn the radio loud. I'm too alone to be proud. And you don't know how it feels. You don't know how it feels to be me.
And we're back. Okay, we've got like 5 minutes to the top of the hour when we will be unceremoniously dismissed by the news. So, and then we have you hostage for another hour, though, so we're not, you know, just to let people know, we're not going to have to try to wrap it up in 5 minutes. But, okay, so you have the bad judge. Who thought, when you were saying before, that they thought that, well, hey, this judge knows him, so she's going to be hard on him? Were those the people prosecuting the case that thought that was going to work out for them?
Yes.
Okay.
The DA.
Just checking.
Who initially, you know, immediately got slapped in the face. Like I said, she was all over them on Tuesday and Wednesday. Thursday became a day that it was a judge's break. Friday they don't have court. And so she came back in on Monday and apologized for her actions. And then immediately, within 20 minutes later, she was back going right after the DA again. So, so let me just kind of back up a couple of things that I had to do my job in getting things done and prepared for case. Again, I told you about marijuana fell out of the card. Well, actually, out of the car. Actually, what the detective had registered it in as is green vegetable matter.
No, you're kidding.
And it wasn't until I got the new DA that I finally got the DA's office. This is King County, Washington, to actually test it. To determine that it was marijuana and Delta 9 THC content, I had to be tested and reported on by their crime lab, that it hadn't been tested for the entire year. Because I said, you're foolishly not going to be taking that green vegetable matter in the courtroom without testing it, are you? I said, you're not going to have the defense attorney tell everybody it's oregano, and you're going to be sitting there with your thumb up your butt going,
Yeah.
Not having tested it. They also one of the reasons the murderer gave was that his car was pulling him to the left. It was pulling him to the left, and he told the police officer that. And so you would think the police, and he admits, he says, I took my car in because it was pulling me to the left. So do you think that they'd find out about that? Nope. So on the year anniversary of my sister's death, I did a Carfax on the car. And I found out it was the Dodge Lithia Chrysler dealership is where he took it in. And he took it in for oil and lube a month before.
Wow.
And, of course, the police excuse was, well, we don't know where he took it in. He didn't tell us. I said, I did the Carfax. You owe me $35. Here you go. Why don't you go to the Dodge Lithia Chrysler dealer and find out who the mechanic is? You should have found this out, I don't know, a year ago?
Yeah, right.
So I was doing their job. Again, the judge then proceeds to throw out the marijuana blood evidence, the marijuana, his previous convictions for DUI, his previous drug convictions. Everything was thrown out. It was too prejudicial. The reason why the blood evidence was thrown out was because the DRE officer screwed up in that when he was filling out his paperwork, don't you think, where would you think in a consensual blood draw form, where do you think the consensual sign-off would be? Maybe near the top? No, it's at the bottom of their form. So the officer started filling out the top of the form, he said, which is the non-consensual blood draw portion. Didn't check off the box why he was taking his blood without his consent. There were three reasons. He didn't check off any of those boxes. But he had him fill out the bottom portion of the form, which was the consensual blood draw portion, which was completely filled out correctly.
Oh, my God. Okay, we'll have a longer blood pressure break here with a little news break. We're going to come back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm. We are talking about the drama that we hope your family is never involved in that unfortunately consumed them. But he is a licensed pharmacist for the past 31 years, has a tremendous amount of information on what marijuana does and does not do. So we hope you will stick with us. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
Hour 2 is next at KCNR Shasta Redding.
And we're back. You are listening to We the People Radio. This is our second hour here with Dr. Philip Drumm. And trying to give you some information that you probably aren't getting. You're definitely not getting it from the marijuana industry.
No.
And not getting it from the media. And apparently, depending on where you live, you're not getting it from the legal.
And what you are getting is a lot of misinformation as well.
I believe we call that propaganda.
Yes.
It's very popular these days. Maybe all that talk about Russian was really to help us figure out about propaganda.
Yeah, could be.
So anyway, just in case you missed the first hour and you have no clue who you're listening to, my name is Aaron Ryan.
And I'm Bill Cundiff.
And I'm Bob Martin.
And when we're all in the same room, really good music comes out because that's Bob's job. And Bill and I just, you know, sit on the sidelines.
I juggle.
Over here on the dumb side. Anyway, all right, speeding back to our guests so we don't run out of we'll run out of time anyway. It's just a given. Okay, so Dr. Drumm, continue the story for us.
Okay, first I'd like to give a shout-out. You played a great song on the Going Out. A good friend of mine, I don't know, a lot of people know this, he's known as Kevin the Bass. I played with Kevin softball when I was working down in Southern California. His name's Kevin Dorsey. He's the oh yeah guy.
He is.
Oh no, yeah. No fooling.
We play that every single week. Yeah. We love that.
Yeah. So his name's Kevin Dorsey. So shout out to Kevin.
That's God. Awesome. What are the odds of that?
So anyway, I kind of had a bad feeling. My brother actually warned me and said that, you know, this is going to be a sham of justice up there, and he wouldn't go. He refused to go. So it was just my mom and I that went up there. My mom, my 84-year-old mother at the time, who's now 88. And you know, I kind of had a wary feeling because I knew how long it took for those clowns up there to find the Green River Killer, and you know, they never caught Bundy up there. They caught him in Florida.
Right.
And so, you know, I kind of knew, you know, I started to realize, you know, I'm dealing with a bunch of incompetence, especially when I started finding out they never tested the marijuana. They never did a Carfax to find out where he had taken his car in. And
yeah.
So back to the courtroom, again, the judge threw out all the evidence, claiming her justification was because of the DRE officer. We were told in no uncertain circumstances on Friday, this was before Monday when she made her final decision, on Friday we met with the DA. Again, the DA's underlings are actually the ones handling the cases. And so the DA, we met with him face-to-face, and we said, you know, we have very serious concerns. We know that this judge is ranked 50 out of 52. We know that she is done racial type of activities. She has a picture of Martin Luther King and Malcolm X in her courtroom above the jury box. And this is a black defendant, and we're white, and the judge is black as well. And so, you know, we knew all this information. We knew how the DA's office had looked at her as being, you know, incompetent and not knowing the facts of law. And so we were assured, well, what's going to happen on Monday with either decision, if she rules for the defense and throws out all the evidence, then we're going to go to an appeals court. And if she goes with it, then the defense keeps the evidence, then the blood evidence and the marijuana, et cetera, then the defense is probably going to ask for an appeal. And so either way, this is probably going to go to an appeals court for decision. And what ends up happening is she makes the decision. We get on the elevator. We go down to the floor of the DA's office, and the DA turns around to my mother and I and goes, well, we just lost the appeals case. And I looked at her and said, what? And she said, oh, yeah, the decision that she made in not trusting the officer's activities, we can't appeal that.
Mm.
And so I looked at her and I said, my brother warned me that this would be a sham of justice. This just became a sham of justice. And I am leaving. And if I'm leaving, my 84-year-old mother is leaving as well. And you'll be conducting this case without the family. And we left.
Wow. I bet that was a hard
case. We later find out that he was found guilty by jury trial. And I said, so he's in jail now. Oh, well, no, the judge let him until tomorrow come up with bail. What's bail set at? $100,000. So I said, so I expect to hear from you on Thursday. This is on Wednesday when the jury came down with their verdict. On Thursday at 12 noon that he's in jail or he's paid his $10,000. So I hear nothing on Thursday. I call him on Friday. Why didn't I hear from you yesterday? Well, he didn't come in. I said, where are the sheriffs going to drive to his house to pick him up? Oh, well, today. Well, we'll go do it today. So he spends the weekend in jail, doesn't like that, and comes up with $10,000 for like 2.5 weeks until sentencing. So he paid $10,000 so he could be out. So we get there for sentencing. My mother and I fly back up there. And he shows up 20 minutes late. We're all standing there. The judge is standing there in the doorway looking. And I'm just going, I'm not paying to come up here again.
Yeah, no kidding.
Said it's all her fault that she let him go out on bail. That we're all waiting. And so finally proceed to, he shows up, obviously stoned. Last time he was going to be able to use his marijuana in a while, maybe. I don't know what they do in their court system up there. And so anyway, shows up and he's sitting there and he's crying and, you know, carrying on like he normally would. And so then it was given to my mother first to speak. Oh, and we were warned by the judge, you're not to look at him. Have you ever seen that in court systems
what do you
before?
Mean you can't look at him.
Look at him.
You cannot look at him. She says, you have to look at me, the judge said. You have to look at me. So my mother proceeds to talk, starts breaking down, and she looks over at him. Judge gavels, I told you you're not to look at him. To my 84-year-old mother.
Whose daughter was killed by him.
Yep.
Yeah, okay.
So she goes, oh, you know, looks over and starts speaking back to the, I'm done now, I'm done. So then it's my time to get up. So I get up there and start talking, telling the history of Rosemary, because again, this is all about him. The whole trial is all about him. There's nothing about Rosemary. It's all about him. So I have to make the judge understand who he killed, who he took from this, who he took from Earth. And I'm telling her this, and she's, of course, looking down, and she's scribbling things on a big pad of paper. And he's standing behind me, so that way, there's no way I was going to be looking at him. I was looking right at her. I was, like, 5 feet away from her, eyeing her all the time. And she, of course, was looking down, wouldn't look at me. And so when I started naming names, like her good friend Judge Ronald Kessler, who is the head of their superior court, and said that he lowered the bail, all of a sudden she breaks in and she goes, wait, when are you going to be done?
Nope.
And I looked at her and I said, Judge, he showed up 20 minutes late.
Yeah, no kidding.
Well, there's other people that want to speak, and you're using up their time. I said, okay. So then, hurriedly went through things. Of course, I couldn't point out to her that, you know, we have high suspicions of her because of the fact that she let him use the marijuana and that she turned around and threw out the marijuana and all the evidence, because I didn't know what she was going to do. I didn't know if she was going to give him a day in jail and let him go. I didn't know. So I couldn't say anything. The jury box was filled with media because I had called them and notified them and let them know to be there. And they were there. Filled up the jury box. So anyway, one other thing that had happened during the court session, actually two other things. So my sister's a friend from work spoke, a person from the neighborhood spoke, and then it was the assault victim was able to speak, and she was too fearful. And the reason why she was fearful was during the court trial, the DA asked her, what did this do to you? What did this event end up having to do to you? You know, what impact did this have on your life? Is that a yes or no question? Mm-hmm. Of course not. So she couldn't answer yes or no. So she said, she went on and said, you know, this has really affected my life. My arm was broken. I've had it set a couple times. My teeth were broken out. She said, you know, and I had to pay for this because he had no insurance on his car. You know, oh, I want a mistrial. The defense says they weren't supposed to know about that because the judge suppressed that evidence.
Why?
That he had no insurance on the car. Prejudicial. Everything was, he was a golden child walking into that courtroom.
No kidding.
So they had a conference and they ended up deciding, well, they weren't going to start all over again and call a mistrial, that the jury was just instructed to just disregard that and forget the fact that he had no insurance on his car. And the judge warned and reprimanded the victim, the assault victim, at the end of the trial when they came back and said he was guilty of the only charge that they could do other than saying he was innocent, that he was guilty of reckless driving, 4.5-year sentence was what would be up for, imposing. She after the jury verdict comes back, she looks out into the audience and tells the assault victim to get out of her courtroom now, that she's not to speak to the jury, get off the ninth floor, get out of the building. The assault victim.
Holy cow.
God, this is...
So she goes out of the courtroom. She's shaking. She's calling her friend to tell him what just happened. The DA walked out of the room and goes, you got to get off this floor. The judge told you to get out of the courtroom, get out of the courthouse. And escorts her out and gets her out of, you know, gets it onto her elevator and get out of there. So she didn't really want to talk in front of this judge. So she had her her partner get up there and speak on behalf of her. Because she was too frightened. She thought the judge was going to throw her in jail for anything she said she didn't know during sentencing. Wow. So that's how we were intimidated. He ends up getting a 4.5-year sentence. He spends less than 3 years, a little over 2 years, in jail for killing my sister. The assault victim's charge of 1.5 years ends up going in combination, so not consecutive, but during concurrent. So he didn't spend any time for the assault victim. Hmm. And so, he's already out. He's out. He's out probably, you know, my brother's seen $1.70 or something like that he's paid, in which he owes over $20,000.
Wow. So,
and I think we've gotten a whopping $1.70 from him, and he's out in the streets.
Yeah. Well, we're going to take another quick break here, Dr. Phil. When we come back, let's talk about what's happened since then. They've made it legal, and has the court system improved, or has it become...
Yeah, and how are we testing for this? We've legalized a drug that causes, you know, behavioral and mental and all that. And you have a lot of information about that. So we have that, and we also have somebody who has a question for you on the phone. So, you know, we're stacked up here. There's a lot going on. We'll be right back with our guest, Dr. Philip Drumm. And, man, we're talking about marijuana, probably the story that you've never heard. This isn't what is normally talked about. Normally it's all rosy and sunshine. You can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Well, you filled up my head with so many lies. You twisted my heart till something snapped inside. I'd like to give it one more try, but my give a damn's busted. I got stoned and I missed it.
That's interesting timing on that little song. Dr. Drumm, I have somebody in the chat room who's pretty convinced that marijuana is a stimulant. So is it?
It's a hallucinogen.
So it's not a stimulant or a depressant. It's in a different category.
No, that's correct. It's in a different category. It's a hallucinogen. And it does have stimulant qualities like the tachycardia, their increased heart rate, and the hypertension, high blood pressure that it caused in the murder. So it does have stimulant properties, physiologic properties to the body. But it is not deemed a stimulant. It's deemed a hallucinogen.
Okay.
It makes you hallucinate.
Lovely. All right, Lori has had a couple of questions for you. She was curious if you got to make a victim statement, and unfortunately she was in the cone of silence while you were actually answering that part.
Yeah, but, I did, and again, was truncated as a result of the Judge Monica Benton, and I also did file a judicial complaint to the state over Judge Monica Benton, and they held it for a year, and then they sent back and said, oh, we see no problems.
Of course,
and it was like 12 pages long of all the activities and how she failed to do her job and she was breaking the law.
Jeez. All right, Lori, what other question did you have for him?
Yeah. Oh, I'm so sorry. I missed that part of it in that little little zone. Thank you, Aaron and Bill, for presenting this topic. And to Dr. Phil, I am just so crushed to hear how awful this is sounding every minute that goes by. Insertion here is locally on our past Friday here, we had a city council meeting in Redding, California, 3 hours long, part one of what might be another follow-up, four people on a panel to investigate and review the pros and cons of medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. The bulk of the people that showed up at the podium for their three-minute allotted time were disruptive, rude, condescending, ill-informed, and just despicable. I just was stunned at the level of the shout-outs. And, Aaron, I know you've been to some of these things with Doug LaMalfa and some of our other political people, and it gets people nowhere.
Right.
It's completely disruptive. So that is what I endured Friday for 3 hours. They videotaped it, as they always do on the City of Reading website, and people can watch. I spoke for 3 minutes on my allotted time, but there were people that needed someone to be escorted out, and people were begging for some of these pro-pot marijuana people that were completely, man, it was 4:20 and they should have left a few minutes earlier to I don't know what.
This is happening all over the state. This is happening all over the state.
Yeah, it's...
The cities are having their own evaluation, and this is exactly what's happening all over the state.
Well, and as soon as they legalize it, then all of a sudden everybody's got to jump through all these hoops and figure out what that means in their community, or, like we see up here, you know, we have bunches of people up in Siskiyou County that have come from Minnesota to grow pot.
And well, you have them coming from Russia.
I'll let you go, but I really appreciate
Cuba
this because this
well.
Is a larger issue, a bigger vision that the federal government is probably using this as a beta test to see what Washington, California, Colorado, they're watching, looking, monitoring, and surveilling so that they can possibly snatch it all up, the land, the profit, take over, Big Pharma and Monsanto. So that's my FYI to people who think this is going to save their life financially and they're going to feel great, wonderful, and life is just a bowl of cherries.
Yeah,
so.
Epic fail. Hey, thanks for that, Lori.
Oh, my God. I look forward to the other callers, and thank you and appreciate you and pray for your family and everyone else, Dr. Phil Drum, D-R-U-M. I looked it up.
Yeah.
All right, thanks, everyone.
Thanks, Lori.
Thanks, Lori.
All right. I don't know. You know, the whole pro-marijuana thing has gotten into this. They've really got people, I don't know, either silenced or just confused because there's so much weird data out there. Can you do some debunking for us?
Sure.
Because you have tons,
sure.
Tons of
again,
that.
Again, reality land is we had Delta 9 THC since 1985. I was, you know, in total shock and would never have believed in 1996 that people would be stupid enough to have approved this. Because saying, you know, where's the medicine people? Or why aren't people out? Why isn't the media letting medicine tell people the truth that we have Delta 9 THC? It's dronabinol. Now it's generic. It's been around so damn long. The reality is that we don't use dronabinol much anymore at all. And it's not even on the top three classes of drugs to use for nausea and vomiting. We've gotten much better drugs that have come out in the early 90s and then later in early 2000s that do wonderful jobs for nausea and vomiting due to chemotherapy. As for the AIDS appetite stimulation, again, this was a major push, you have to understand, from the AIDS community in the early 80s, back when we had no drug treatment, until we finally got AZT in 88 and 89. And now we received in the mid-90s a class of drugs called the protease inhibitors, and we've gotten drugs in the early 2000s of the integrase inhibitors that have now turned HIV essentially into like a chronic disease, like diabetes. And so there's no need for the appetite stimulation from marijuana. Because I'm sure a lot of you, the older people, remember what we saw of those AIDS patients in the 80s, all very, what we call cachectic. They're very skinny. They look like they were from Dachau and Auschwitz.
Yeah.
That's what they looked like because they were having so many ravages of multiple diseases, of multiple infectious diseases. And again, I saw these patients. These were my patients that I had as an oncology pharmacist. So when I worked in a hospital, these were the patients that I took care of, the cancer patients and the AIDS patients. And again, used marijuana, and I'll never forget, or Marinol, I'll never forget the first patient I gave it to. Never. It was when I did my residency in Illinois in the mid-80s. And we used it on an 84-year-old woman that had breast cancer that we gave Adriamycin. It's known as Red Death because it causes a lot of damage. It causes a lot of nausea and vomiting, really bad. But it also suppresses your bone marrow and immune system. And so the doctors, anytime any drug comes out, they're, oh, I want to use it, I want to use it, I want to use it. And so we used it. And again, it comes in 2.5 milligram, 5 milligram, and 10 milligram capsules. And I said, based on her age, let's use 2.5 milligrams. And you can repeat it if you need it in 4 hours. Well, the nurses automatically gave it to her in 4 hours. She wasn't vomiting, but she was hallucinating to beat the band. And we walked in the next morning, and the nurses looked like they had seen a ghost. And I remember asking the nurse, what's going on? And she said, well, we've had a major problem all night with her. And it's like, well, why? And it's like, it's that damn dronabinol. She was hallucinating all night. And so we walked in there, and by this time she was lucid. And she told us, whatever you gave me, don't ever give that to me again. I'd rather throw up all night than feel like that. Mm. That was my first patient that got dronabinol from the FDA.
Wow. Is it a smaller dose now or something?
No. In fact, I was just looking around on WeBaps, and I just found a 1,000-milligram dose being sold for $50.
What?
1,000 milligrams.
And
the maximum FDA-approved dose is 10 milligrams.
Wow.
That's what these idiots are selling out there, along with their butane, hash oil remnants, 2,4-dibutadiene, which is a carcinogen and known mutagen. That's in all of their edibles. They're desperately now trying to get these things out. But, of course, now they're going to have to use much more expensive chemicals to do this.
Right.
So, again, your black market's just thriving in Colorado.
Yeah, making it illegal.
Because the price of this is going up.
Yeah, making it legal isn't going to get rid of the black market at all. I think, if anything, it's going to make it bigger.
Absolutely.
Because the government's going to be involved. They're going to tax the heck out of it.
That's right.
And if you can buy it cheaper on the black market and have it in your possession with no penalty.
You can't prove where it came from.
Then people are going to go that route.
Yeah, the seed to sale concept in Colorado that we're gonna track it from seed until it's breaking down. That's not working.
No,
they can't do that.
No,
I mean, are they doing that with bell peppers?
Yeah, no,
seed to sale, really?
Well, I think the governor of Colorado has come out publicly and stated that he realizes now he's made a huge mistake.
It depends on what day you're talking to Hick and Doper, whether it's on a Monday or a Friday, you know, and who he's talking to.
Well, he probably visited Nevada and couldn't get any, so, you know.
State of emergency. Well, that's an interesting concept, too, on how they've allowed the alcohol industry to do the distribution for 18 months, and all of a sudden, wow, there's not enough drug around. Because the alcohol industry is doing the distribution. Their major concern in Colorado was, what's going to happen to our beer and alcohol sales in Colorado? Well, they found out it actually went up after recreational or hallucinating marijuana became a market. So they got what they wanted and they backed off, although I don't think they're as trusting of that yet in Nevada until they see it.
Yeah, that's a huge lobby.
We've got to take a really quick break here again, and we have a caller on the line for you when we come back. And so, everybody, stay where you are. We'll be right back. 2 minutes. You're listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.
We don't smoke marijuana in Muskogee. We don't take our trips on LSD. We don't burn our draft cards down on Main Street. 'Cause we like living right and being free.
It's getting hard to wake up in the morning. My head is spinning.
Back. Okay, so we don't have to keep you hostage too much longer. Billy Bob, you had a question or a comment for Dr. Drum?
Billy Bob?
Is he in there?
Oh.
Oh, we had to flip the secret switch.
Hello, are you there?
Yeah, there you go.
Go ahead, Billy Bob, you're on.
Aaron, okay, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, listen, I had to weigh in. I really appreciate the passion and dedication that your guest has had and the suffering he's had to go through in the death of his daughter, I guess. But there's no excuse for that. And all I got to say is that in the greater overall sense of this situation, which you're talking about, which is marijuana, I've been around this marijuana for 45 years. I don't understand why all of a sudden you get one crazy guy that causes all the grief and dismay to this one individual, and shit, he had a rap sheet probably as long as his arm. Who knows? But the point of it is that you can't just put this in one nutshell. It's going to be around here. It is a great medicinal drug. I don't care who they are, and you're a medical doctor. I understand that. But, hey, it's not what everybody's making it out to be. And there's a few crazies out there. It's just like with alcohol. It's just like with guns. It's just like, you know, terrorists.
Okay.
Everything's got its extremes.
All righty. Well, let's let him address that. Thanks for calling.
Sure. Again, we're talking medicine here, and medicine goes through the Food and Drug Administration, and there's no drug out there that has 60 chemicals in a product, okay, which is what we're talking about with marijuana. having 60 chemicals in the product. We have drug-drug interactions that interact with other medications that we have to be sure as to which of the chemicals is causing problems. And so, therefore, you don't have 60 chemicals in a medicine. That's just completely unheard of and ridiculous. And I'd love to talk about Salman Abedi, who's the Manchester, England bomber, who was had erratic behavior for 5 years before he bombed there, knowing to have been smoking marijuana and mixing with gangs. How about Richard Rojas, who was a troubled man with a history of drunken driving, bolted from his maroon Honda Accord after he smashed into 20 people in Times Square in May? How about the Washington Cascade mall shooter, Arkan Seated, who blamed his cannabis for his behavior? How about Omar Mateen, the Orlando nightclub shooter, admitting to using marijuana and steroids? How about Robert Deere, who shot people at the Planned Parenthood in Colorado in November of 2015? How about Brasim Abdeslam, the Paris bomber, who was known to be being a marijuana dealer from his cafe in Molenbeek, Brussels? How about Jody Herring, the mother on THC pills for pain, who shot and killed a Vermont social worker and two others? How about the Chattanooga, Tennessee shooter, Mohammed Albedizi, who killed four Marines and a sailor, who was a known heavy user of marijuana? How about Dylan Roof, who shoots 9 parishioners dead in Charleston, South Carolina, and was an admitted marijuana user with schizophrenia? How about Richard Kirk in Colorado, the father of 3, who shoots his wife in the head while she's on the phone talking to a 911 operator after eating marijuana-laced candy for the first time? How about the mall in Columbia, Maryland shooter, Darren Aguilar, who killed 2 and then himself, a known marijuana user? How about the Boston bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers, who were heavy marijuana users? You know, do I need to continue? I can. The Tucson Massacre shooter, Jared Loughner, who was a habitual pot user before he shot Gabrielle Giffords in the head. I mean, I could keep going. Pentagon shooter John Bendel, history of mental illness and marijuana use. The Aurora, Colorado theater shooter, John Holmes, was reported to be a marijuana user. Jacob T. Robertson, Clackamas Town Center, Oregon, who killed 2 people and seriously injured 1 in December 2012 and then killed himself, was a chronic marijuana user since age 16. This is not to be used in people with mental health disorders, especially those that have PTSD. Studies are already out there that have proven and shown this makes the PTSD worse. The data's out there.
Well, and it's very hard to control the dosage, but to go back to the list you just read, lots of those I didn't know, and I guess that was my point. They don't test for it, and because there is no uniformity here, they don't test for it, so it doesn't come out, and it's not part of the equation. So we're not actually getting...
That's right.
We're not getting the truth about this.
Recently it came out that the DUID, driving under influence of drugs, has exceeded driving under the influence of alcohol, and that's combining all drugs. But the leading drug after alcohol since 2006 involved in fatal crashes is marijuana. Since 2006, it is the agent after alcohol. And we've done some research recently to look at the number of innocents being killed. Here's some other data that I've gotten recently to share with your audience. The peak time, I think most people recognize this, for alcohol driving fatalities to occur is 10 p.m. to about 2 a.m.
Sure.
When the bars
close. Right.
Right? So that makes sense to a lot of people. What's the peak time for marijuana driving fatalities?
You told
probably
me.
After 5?
4 to 8 p.m. when these people are getting off of work.
Sure.
That is rush hour traffic.
Yeah, and the odds
and
are higher,
if you want to add alcohol, which I said, marijuana doubles the risk of a driving fatality. Add a little alcohol, just a little, a beer with that bong hit, and you now have an 8-fold increase of being involved in a fatal traffic incident, and that occurs from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. because it takes people a couple hours to go to the bar, get loaded, and then get back into their cars and try and drive home. There's also a spike in the morning between 6 and 8 a.m. when people are driving to work because people aren't consuming at work. They're consuming before and after work. Because they're addicted, they have to do it. Whereas for alcohol, the driving fatality rates climb, of course, on the weekend, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights. There's a slight peak on Saturdays, But for the most part, it's consistent every day because marijuana, the hallucinogen, is an addictive substance that has to be used every day.
Right.
Unbelievable. And the industry doesn't want any of this to come out. They I would imagine the marijuana industry, just kind of in general, and it's, I know, I realize it's got a wide range, but they probably are not big fans of a national standard like we have the alcohol impairment standard.
Right.
Probably
right.
Not.
Well, because they're willing to let the states have their own various haphazard level. And so the state of Colorado actually has the worst limit. People say, oh, it's the level's five. No, it's not. It's a presumed, it's a presumptive inference or something. It's a joke. And in fact, a senator in our state is now attempting to adopt that exact same language here in California. Let me just pull up that bill to let everybody know and to let your people here in the state to make sure that this bill goes down to defeat. Right now it's kind of in limbo and it's just hanging there. But it's SB 698 by Senator Hill, and he has no co-authors, interestingly. And so they're trying to create a, that, again, they would have to require a person to fail field sobriety tests to establish probable cause for a chemical test to test the person's blood, and that's what they have to do already anyway. Mm-hmm. And so that was added to the bill recently. But they wanted to change it to, they wanted to lower the blood alcohol to 0.04 to 0.7, would be a rebuttable presumption for alcohol, and that a rebuttable presumption that a person had a 5 nanogram per ml or more Delta 9 THC in his blood. That's what Colorado has, is what's called a rebuttable presumption. And I could cite a case in which a girl failed her field sobriety test. That should have been enough.
Right.
But had a blood level of 19. Goes before a jury of her pothead peers, and they find her not guilty.
Wow.
Because you have a rebuttable presumption in the state of Colorado. Now, different in the state of Washington, because when they approved I-502, they wisely at least put some type of driving limit. But unfortunately, it's a level of 5 nanograms per ml. It's a per se limit, just like our blood level for alcohol is a per se limit, meaning you're guilty if you're at that value or greater. The problem, as I told you, is that after 2 hours, your level's usually 2. After 1 hour, your level's usually 5. Okay, so if you're not getting blood drawn within an hour, you're not going to be found guilty in the state of Washington. And the state of Washington also now delayed and makes them have to get a warrant to draw somebody's blood.
Well, that takes time.
In the state of Washington. How do you like that?
Yeah, that ought to give them just about enough time.
So that'll give them enough time. Yeah, it actually takes them 45 minutes.
Sure.
That came out in my sister's trial. They asked the judge, of course, asked him why he didn't get a warrant. And he reminded the judge at the time in July 17th of 2012, there was no requirement for a warrant. And that he could draw blood even if the guy was driving recklessly without his consent. Or if he killed somebody, which he did. Or if he injured somebody, which he did. So he had all rights to draw the blood without his consent, even though he did have his consent. But now they're requiring everybody to, because it takes 45 minutes, say, no, it's delaying. Guess who's behind these bills?
The marijuana industry. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah.
Big shocker. All right. We've got to take one last really quick break before we get to the top of the hour. Sorry.
Yeah,
okay, when we come back, Bill's got a question.
Yeah.
And we have another hostage on hold who has a question for you. And we need another hour. Bottom line is we've got like 10 minutes, and it's not going to be enough. I'm disgruntled. We're here with Dr. Philip Drum talking about the dark side of marijuana and a lot of the stuff you probably haven't heard before. You can find this online this afternoon. You'll get an archive here right after the show at wethepeopleradio.us. Please share it with your friends.
They said they would. They stone you knocks on you when you're there all alone. But I would not feel so all alone. Everybody must get stoned.
I messed up my entire life because I got high. I lost my kids and wife because I got high.
Say what?
Now I'm sleeping on the sidewalk and I know why.
Why, man?
Yeah, because I got high. Because I got high. Because I got high. La la la.
I don't need to say more.
All right, so we don't keep her trapped in there. Thanks for waiting, Kay. Do you have a comment or a question for Dr. Drum?
Kay?
Hello?
Hey, there you are.
Oh. Well, hi, Aaron, Bill, and Dr. Phil. This has been great. It's only the sad part is it's too short.
It is too short.
We need to have them come up here and talk to us.
Yeah.
Where are you, how far away are you?
I'm in the Bay Area.
Yes, yeah, so he's probably about 3.5 hours from us.
Well, I've been working on the, there's somebody, a friend of our family's who's has been taking opiates and marijuana for pain management. And now the doctors have already switched around and they give him 7 days to get off the opiates. And then they won't give them anything if they have a marijuana script or whether they've been taking marijuana or not. They don't seem to communicate to the patient, you know, and have a heart-to-heart talk about what's going on. And they didn't tell them before that if they had, okay, you have your choice. If you're going to be on marijuana, if you have the script, then we can't give you an opiate. So, I mean, there's just all kinds of problems.
All right. Maybe we can get him to address all that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you so much.
Hey, thanks, Kay.
Keep up the good work.
Absolutely. Appreciate
Bye-bye.
It. Bye-bye. Okay, so what about that? And, you know, where I see this the most is with our veteran population.
Right. Yeah, unfortunately, what the marijuana industry just won't absolutely address and come to reality with is marijuana is the gateway drug. I go and give talks with a Superior Court judge in San Joaquin County, and we link up with Folsom Prison and Chowchilla Prison for the men at Folsom and the women at Chowchilla, and go to junior high and high school kids. And they love to hear from the inmates. And the inmates will tell them, you get involved with alcohol and marijuana, and you're on your way to becoming a gang member and becoming an addict. We have addicts that come in as part of their time that they have to, talk to the public about their addictions and their issues. And one of the interesting things that hit me one day was one of the addicts standing next to me said that the most difficult drug for him to get off of was marijuana.
Wow.
And it makes sense. It makes sense pharmacologically to me. All of a sudden it hit me. It was like, oh, of course. Because it's fat soluble. Your other drugs like heroin and opiates are water soluble. They will go through withdrawals from a water soluble drug within days. 3, 4, 5 days, they're going through withdrawals. Okay, methadone a little bit longer because it's got a longer half-life. But those drugs, they'll go through withdrawals quicker. You know how long it takes to start seeing withdrawals from marijuana in a true addict? Mm. 21 days.
Wow. Oh, wow.
There was a study done by Marilyn Hustis, who was at the National Institute of Health, and she brought people in that were 30 to 60 joint smokers a day.
Wow. Jeez.
And she brought them in, hospitalized them, and she says she started losing them at around 18, 19, 20. Because, again, these people couldn't be held in the hospital. They were there voluntarily, and they quit the study because she was trying to find out how long does the THC and its metabolites stay in the body? How long does it take for it to leave the fat stores? And people were going through withdrawal. They couldn't sleep. They couldn't eat. They were going psychotic on days 18, 19, and 20. And all she had to do was give them a joint. That's what they did. They went on the outside. They smoked a joint, and they were back to being okay because their receptors were just craving this stuff. I just want to point out the toxicology found in Colorado suicides from 2009 to 2013 for 10 to 19 year olds. 10 to 19-year-olds. The number one drug found in suicide victims in Colorado is marijuana, 16%. Alcohol is number two at 11%. Opioids was number three.
Wow.
At 5.7%. So, again, don't believe the lies of what you're hearing out there because, again, we want to go after the opiates. And then even the opiates, what are they claiming? Oh, you can use marijuana for that, too.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yep.
Like I said, just remember what I said. What drug has as many indications as marijuana has? There isn't one.
Hmm.
Question that, people. Like I said, aspirin is probably the closest to me, and again, I don't have them chew on a willow tree. Yes, we do have medications that come from plants, and we synthesize them, and we take them out of the plant. The Pacific yew tree was making our agent for ovarian and breast cancer. We've synthesized it. We don't use the yew tree anymore to create our paclitaxel.
With Colorado being, I think, the state that's had legalized marijuana, one of the states, it's been the longest.
Been in Washington in 2012.
Right. Now, do you have any numbers on, and I'm sorry, we only got a couple of minutes left here, but as far as the revenue to the state, that was one of the big selling points, was they were going to make money on it.
It's kind of like the California lottery was going to fund the schools.
Yeah, have they made money, or are they making money on this?
Well, they're getting tax dollars. Are they making money? No. They're in a budget deficit in the state of Colorado, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So their marijuana is not bringing in their tax dollars to keep down a budget deficit. And here's reality land. Department of Transportation came out in 2010 and estimated the cost of a driving fatality to be $1.4 million per driving fatality. Okay, $1.4 million. That was the loss in income to the person. That was the cost of hospitalizations, the cost of the police, the cost of insurance, everything. $1.4 million per driving fatality. Okay, in 2015, Colorado had 115 marijuana driving deaths.
Yeah, so
they took in $128 million. Now, if you give us a 3 to 4% increase in that $1.4 million, you're up to $1.6 million per driving fatality in 2015. Okay, 1.6. Multiply that times 115. You're up to $180 million due to the marijuana driving deaths alone, and they took in 128.
Right.
The pot industry owes just. For the driving deaths, the state of Colorado, $50 million more in 2015.
Ooh.
And this is not even looking at the increased number of hospitalizations, the increased number of emergency room visits, the increased number of addictions, the increased number of butane hash oil explosions that result in the need for skin grafting, the increased number of crime going on in the state.
Sure.
So legalizing it is going to be great because it's going to make us tons of money as a giant lie. God, what a shock.
I'm just like alcohol and tobacco. For $1 in tax, you spend 10 socially. Yeah.
Well, sounds like a great move.
Sounds like we're going to talk again.
Yeah. Yeah, we need to have you back on. We have so many more questions and we're out
more
of
than
time.
Willing.
Great.
Thank you so
Thanks.
Much.
More than willing to tell the truth.
Absolutely. Hey, and so for people out there, we'll have the archive up in like 10 minutes here on Sunday afternoon, and then a little bit later today we'll have it commercial free. Please post it on Facebook, shoot it out through Twitter, and let people know. And for our friends that are listening from overseas, we've got a lot of people like in Ukraine that listen. Don't be potheads, hey, guys. I don't know if you have that over there, but don't do it. It's
we'll
a mess.
Accused of collusion.
Exactly. Love our Ukrainian guys. So anyway, thanks a lot, Dr. Drum. See you guys all next week. You've been listening to We the People. Join us online, wethepeopleradio.us.